Hello, hello, and welcome to Expat Chronicles. This is Kim and Lizzie, and today our topic is a very special topic, and it's dear to my heart, it's dear to, I'm sure, others' hearts, and as you may or may not know, this month is Autism Awareness Month, the month of April, and we have our special guest here to discuss and talk about being a parent with an autistic child, and also traveling with an autistic child, putting them out there, knowing that the world isn't against you when it comes to having something that is just a disorder and not a disease. And we are very happy to discuss this topic, to share our thoughts, and of course, for you to leave those comments and tell us what you think. So once again, welcome to Expat Chronicles. Okay, so just to kind of dive right into it, we're going to start off first with introducing our guest. So we want to introduce our guest here, Brandy Williams. Brandy, say hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're so happy to have you here. And for those who don't know, Brandy is actually visiting us from the U.S. She's here in the UAE, visiting, experiencing the culture, seeing how we navigate, move, etc. And so we're so happy to have her here. And just a little facts about Brandy. She is an elementary teacher, but she is a teacher and educator, a very wise educator, I want to throw in there. All right. Who has a degree not just in elementary education, but also in Pan-African studies as well, an advanced degree. So she's really, really well versed in teaching about the culture, the histories, etc., to our youth, and also identifying or being able to identify, not necessarily diagnose, those with autistic needs, because herself has experienced that with her own son, which we'll get into a little later. She's been an educator for 15 years, and of course, she is a world traveler. Mm-hmm. I've actually been fortunate enough to travel with her to some of the locations that she's been to outside of the U.S. So we have that understanding with, and not just with herself, not just with her, but also with her son as well. So it's not something, and that's something that we really want to get into about traveling with a son that has the disorder, the autism spectrum disorder, ASD. But before we get into that, let's kind of dive into understanding what ASD is. And Lizzie, I know you have a little facts you want to share with us, so go ahead and share that with us.
Okay. Hey, everybody. We're going to start with a bit of some facts, the true, hard, cold facts. So autism spectrum disorder, commonly known as ASD, is a developmental disability that is caused by differences in the brain. It sometimes brings challenges in social communication, interaction, repetitive behavior. And simply put, if I were to give a layman's definition on autism, I would say it's having somebody do things differently. They learn differently, they move differently, they play differently, and they pay attention differently. It's estimated that 268 billion is spent worldwide annually on autism. And across the world, one in six people have sensory needs. In the Middle East, especially, throwing out some facts, in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, it's one in 99. In Oman, it's one in 93. The UAE, it's one in 89. And in Qatar, it's one in 66 people have sensory needs. Okay, there has been a drastic increase in autism diagnosis over the years. 600% increase in diagnosis. And according to the World Health Organization, one in every 160 children are diagnosed with autism. Hey.
Wow. That's insane. Yeah. You really don't think about that, because a lot of it is, you don't even realize that it's not a lot of people assume that when a child is autistic, you can easily see it in their face, that disorder. You can see it in their behavior right away, but it's not the case. It's really not. And that's what we're here to discuss about those little things, because as Lizzie was saying that, you know, there are, when it comes to identifying, there are those who are left out, okay? Mm-hmm. Knowing that boys are more 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls, knowing that, unfortunately for us, since we are part of that minority group, that they, our children, our minority children, tend to be diagnosed later on and less often. So they are going out there, and we can go into a whole field about how it can be when they are have mental health issues, they grow up with it being undiagnosed, and then they get into an instant, especially in the U.S., where they're being targeted, and unfortunately, fatal outcomes happen. So things like that, but that's another topic for another day, all right? We don't need to get into all of that. But we know that it's something that people should start embracing, should start understanding, and it's not a stigma. It's not something where you will be shamed and pushed away. And really opening to that understanding for others to accept it and to understand. So we're here, and we want to go ahead and dive in. And Brandy, like I said, you're here with us, and we want to ask some questions personally to you about your son, because as you said, and before we dive into just those tidbits, can you tell us a little bit about your son's diagnosis and how that went for you in the beginning?
Yeah, so my son is about to be 17 at the end of May. So he actually wasn't diagnosed until he was around 9, almost 10 years old.
Later on.
This is the typical age of when kids start getting diagnosed between like 5 and 9 years old. Mm-hmm. But as his mother, I noticed a lot of things about him. He had a lot of early developments, such as being able to speak very early. He walked very early. He was hitting all of those milestones at a very early age. And then when he started to go to school at around 5, that's when I was able to have other eyes on him to tell me different social aspects and behavioral things that they were noticing that I wouldn't have noticed because he's an only child, right? So school is the time where he's around other kids socializing. Mm-hmm. So there were little things that they would pick up as far as like my son not being able to understand different social cues, body language cues. He was also highly, highly focused on certain topics. And it was a positive because he knew all the information about him, such as he could tell you every Thomas the Train Engine. He could tell you about any dinosaur. His vocabulary was highly developed for the age that he was at. But it really wasn't until he started to get into maybe about 3rd or 4th grade. Mm-hmm. Where he was struggling, and he would come home sometimes very frustrated, or his teachers would be very frustrated because they would allow him to do things like read. Like, he was an early reader,
right?
And he loved reading, but it was very hard to pull him from a certain task to then rejoin the whole class.
Okay.
And this started to exhibit itself in very angry outbursts, frustration from his side,
right.
Because he was also very literal. Mm-hmm. And just as a parent, I started to pick up on, you know, I think he's okay, but I think there's certain things that I want to pay attention to.
Right.
And as an educator, I knew that there was this space to get him tested.
Mm-hmm.
And my pursuing the journey of getting him tested was not so that he could just have this diagnosis to have it, but it was more about, I want to understand my child.
Right.
Better,
yeah. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I want other adults and students to understand him. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that I don't know about and there's a language in this world, I want to be able to understand it, and I want to be able to access the support.
Right.
And luckily, at the time when I was in New York, I was surrounded by a friend group that was very knowledgeable about autism, special education services, IEPs.
So you had that support there, right there, yeah.
I had a lot of support, and they also are educators.
Okay.
And were able to recognize certain things and suggested, you know what, you should write in to get him tested. Because at the end of the day, they're either going to tell you, no, he doesn't fit any of these criteria, but this is how we can support him, or yes, he actually is displaying some of these characteristics of whatever is the diagnosis, and this is how we can support him. So it was more about getting him the best support so that he's less frustrated in the school space and he's able to be acclimated better.
Right.
I think that's very important because people, most as a parent, you dread having your child tested.
Yeah.
But you don't realize the significance in that. Either way, you learn how to best support your child.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're diagnosed with autism.
Yeah.
Or it's just a behavioral problem.
Right.
You
learn
how best to support your child through this journey. Because if you ignore it, the problem is not going to go away at all.
Right, right. And that's the scary part with a lot of people. They're scared, like I said earlier, with that stigma, right? But what I really liked what you said, Brandy, is that when you started to actually dive into this and started to recognize these behaviors coming from your son, you had that support. You were able to actually talk to a group of people that said, hey, think about doing it this. Think about doing that. But I want to say that that probably happened because you were open to that communication.
Definitely, right? Definitely.
And that's a large part. Because let's be real, some people don't even know how to communicate within their own relationships, their own marriage, you know?
Yeah.
And so to communicate outside of that box towards something that you already are already hesitant maybe and scared to say, oh my gosh, my child has this, you know, has ASD or may have ASD.
Yeah.
That's a hard part to do. And to hear that you were able to put yourself out there and, and say, hey, you know, this is what it is. And the support you that was shown to you, like, okay, do this, do that.
Yeah.
It's really endearing because it doesn't, it may not always happen, or people may feel like it may not happen to them if they put themselves out there. And in reality, it's there. It's there to help you, even if you simply just go online. I know a lot of the newer generation may not use Facebook, but you know, ours a little older, you know, uses Facebook, and I have found so much information just typing in the group, hey, can you help me with this? And the amount of people that are saying, hey, this is what you do, this is how you help, this is how you navigate, you know, and you can pick and choose and see the help. It's endearing. It's really nice to see.
Go ahead.
Just the other side of it is, as parents, there's two ways. You could be the one with a child who could possibly have a diagnosis, or you could be the one with a child who is friends with somebody who has a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So as human beings, we need to become more aware about autism.
Right.
It's Autism Awareness Month.
True.
If you do not know what autism is, then this is the time you find out.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody who is either affected or somehow, some way is in contact with someone who's affected.
Right.
And you need to either be the one who's supporting someone else,
mm-hmm.
or you could be the one who needs the support.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can't provide either one unless you're aware of what's going on.
True.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about learning how to support either yourself, people in your family, or people in your community, right? And I think as parents, one of the things that we all go through is that it's this fantasy, right? Like, we find out we're pregnant and we have all of these hopes and dreams, and like, our brain like makes this movie of like, this is what your child's gonna be like, and this is what their life is gonna be like.
Right.
And then, like all parents, we find out, oh my God, This is, they're their own human beings. Yes. And they have their own journey to go through. And one of the things that, and I'm sure that this goes across just people in the U.S., but there's, even though we live in this time where we're finding out more about different mental health, different neurological disorders, different ways of processing the world. And I'm so glad to live in a space where like this information is out there. Okay. For a very long time, it's been this stigma that there can be nothing wrong with your child. And if there is something wrong with your child, then it's because you as a parent did something wrong.
Yes.
And I think as parents, I know I went through this where at first it was me having to admit to myself that what I'm seeing in my child doesn't make him wrong. It doesn't make him different. It doesn't mean that I did something to hurt him. Because I think sometimes, especially as parents, as mothers, we feel guilty, like, oh my God, did I do something? Did I not get the correct exercise? Did I not take the right vitamins?
Yeah. Right.
You know, did I not read to them enough? Yeah. Did I not, you know, did I not do something enough? And the great thing about either going online and finding your community, whether you have a diagnosis or not, it's just to ask questions, is to find out your kid is not the only one who's going through this.
Yeah.
And you, your feelings that you're having is not crazy. Like, you're not the only one who's processing this. Yeah. And there are others who have processed these same feelings. Mm-hmm. And once you get out of your own way of, like, feeling guilty, you get to that happy space where this is not about blame on the child or the parent. This is about, my child processes the world differently, and I need to know how to support them so that they can have a joyous experience in this life, and so that I can help them understand that everybody is different. Yeah. And just because you process the world differently doesn't mean that you're any less or better than anyone else. You just need the supports in how to function in this world. And better yet, what you said, Lizzie, the world needs better supports in how to support you and how to undo their thinking of there's this one way to process the world. And if you process it differently than what we quote unquote say the normal is, then there's something wrong with you. It's nothing wrong with you. You just process the world differently. Just like everyone processes the world differently, right?
And when you say processing, because I want our audience to understand processing with an example. So, Brandy, I know you shared an example of how your son processed death. I would love for our audience to hear, you know, an example of how someone with ASD can process something like death. So can you share that with us as well?
Definitely. One of the key characteristics of autism spectrum disorder, and to be very clear, my son was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. So a lot of the medical profession doesn't use Asperger's syndrome anymore. Mm-hmm. They have just lumped this in with autism spectrum disorder. It's seen as a high functioning, whatever that means, because even that's problematic to say high functioning, low functioning. Mm-hmm. But it's part of the autism spectrum disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people with autism are very literal, right? So the how many people learn that death is a negative thing, it's a sad thing, it should evoke sad emotions, empathy for others. People with autism, some people, because again, this is not a generalization across the board,
right?
But some people have a very hard time being empathetic to others' feelings.
Right.
And that's part of the social cues in them having to learn how to assess what their words or facial expressions may be saying to other people.
Right.
So my great-grandmother passed away. Obviously, I was very sad. My mother was very sad. We were crying. And my son noticed this and asked, well, why are you crying? So we explained to him what was going on. And he just very matter-of-factly was just like, well, she's older and everything dies. He was like, don't you remember we learned that everything has a life cycle and everything dies.
Right.
So you knew she was going to die. So why are you sad about this?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And for some people not understanding his condition, right, or his way of thinking and processing the world, maybe like, oh, my God, he's so rude. He's empathetic.
But he's asking a valid question. He's asking a valid question.
He was asking a valid question, and it is a very matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So then it made me start to think like, oh, my God. So where did I learn that this very matter of fact thing that's a part of all life cycles on this earth, where did I learn that you're supposed to have this emotion of crying?
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't learn that, right? So it makes you just start to reflect on how many of our behaviors are learned behaviors.
So that's how that works,
You touched on a few. So when we're researching on this topic, there are like five major misconceptions on autism. And the first one was bad parenting causes autism. And you touched on that. So this is out there, guys. Autism has got nothing to do with someone's parenting.
No.
And having been around people whose kids are autistic, parents are judgy. So when you have an autistic child in the room and you see them jumping up and down, being highly energetic and so forth, we tend to be very judgy and say, oh, if this were my child, I wouldn't do that. Guys, this is autism. It's not bad parenting. It's nothing somebody did. And contrary to what people believe, you berating or shouting at the child doesn't help. It actually makes the situation a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
I feel like it makes it even worse, even if the child wasn't autistic, to be yelling and berating a child in general, right? Like, just those. But I understand that these, you know, like, understanding the child. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
And then, especially with your son, the second misconception was that being autistic means someone is intellectually disabled.
Mm.
That is not true. Your son is the very opposite of that.
No, and that's the, to me, that is the beauty of having a spectrum, right? And again, this might be a reach, but I've said it to you guys outside of the podcast. When you listen to the characteristics of things that someone with ASD could display, you will quickly find that, oh my God, I do this, right? I am highly obsessive over this one topic, right? I may like things in a specific order. When I get nervous, I may tap my pencil incessantly, or I may click my nails or chew gum, right? So these stimming behaviors are also part of the autistic spectrum disorder, right? And when it comes to intellect, I think that's such a sensitive topic that has been very problematic of how we understand intellect, right? Because whether you're diagnosed with autism or not, everyone is intellectually gifted in certain areas that may be highlighted in your academics or may be highlighted outside of an academic situation. And just as a parent of I had to go through my own learning of what autism was and intellectualism was. It just helped me to understand that we knew so little and we had such a narrow concept of what being an intellectual is, and still do, because a lot of the times our intellectual characteristics display around, oh, are you a good reader? Do you comprehend well? Do you do math well? Can you write well? Like these very limited ways of showing your brilliance in an area. And while my son, yes, like you said, he's highly intellectual, right? He's never struggled in his academics or showing his test scores and all of these things very simply. There are people on the ASD, on the spectrum, that do have intellectual disabilities, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And this is where the spectrum comes through. So your child may have intellectual disabilities, or they may be highly smart. And with Asperger's, it's more of the social conditioning that they have some delays with, right? And it's not an intellectual or linguistic or language development. Your child also may be highly intellectual, but may have some developmental delays with language.
Right.
That they're not able now to communicate with you what you know, but if you gave them a different space and way to show that intellectualism, they may be able to do it if it's not orally done.
Yeah. Now, you touched on something, Brandy, that I want to, I think a lot of people may not know about,
mm-hmm.
is you said that, you know, you yourself, when you recognize you might have certain habits, you might do certain things. And a part of that could, I think a lot of people are unaware, is that ASD can be hereditary.
Yes.
And it can be passed down, you know, from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, like coming from, you know, from our parents and our parents' parents and, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera, it wasn't as recognized as it is now and today, you know? And so with that, can you tell us a little bit more? Because I know you learned a little bit more about that hereditary part when it comes to ASD.
Yeah, so a lot of the times what they're finding with anything within mm-hmm. mental health, a lot of the times there's a lot of misdiagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just about taking the standard person, which disproportionately lends itself to white culture, right?
Yeah.
Outside of white culture, there are certain things that are done in cultures that are outside of that
mm-hmm.
That may not be the norm mm-hmm. and may get things misdiagnosed, right? And when we talk about testing, it says a lot of the times kids with ASD may be misdiagnosed with having attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
They may be misdiagnosed with having obsessive compulsive disorder
mm-hmm.
or even like oppositional defiance disorder, mm-hmm. which I'm not sure if that's like super big over here mm-hmm. in the UAE, but in the States, like, it's really big, this oppositional defiance disorder, which basically means in my understanding, that the child has a very hard time taking orders from authority figures, which I've heard older generations just be like, oh, that's just typical teenage behavior. Right. That's typical middle school behavior. Yeah, and they brush it
mm-hmm,
off. And they have every right to brush it off, because in their generation, they didn't have all of these diagnoses,
mm-hmm.
right? And as we grow as humans and learn more about the brain, we're able to create these labels, good or bad, that help us to understand why people do what they do.
Right.
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 That's what all of this is about. It's just helping us understand why people do what they do. I think I'm getting lost.
Hereditary part.
So
of that,
as far as like hereditary, my mom was never given the option to be diagnosed with this,
mm-hmm.
right? Having the testing when she was in school, they weren't doing testing for this like they are now. Her parents, the language wasn't there, right?
Yeah.
So when we find out that these things can be hereditary, it could be as simple as going through some of these generalized lists and looking at some of the characteristics and be like, wow, you know what? My father was super obsessive
mm-hmm.
about these particular facts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
He's also very literal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
He's also very rigid about how he does things. If there is something that's thrown off in his schedule, like, that creates a whole block, right? And some of the things that I'm talking about the rigidness of your schedule and something coming in to interrupt your schedule, that causes issues with people who are on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Being obsessive about certain topics, mm-hmm. or finding it very easy to learn facts about things that they like and mm-hmm. being able to hold on to those mm-hmm. facts. Mm-hmm. These are all different. These are just a few characteristics of people who are on the autism spectrum disorder. So you can easily go through that and ask your family members and find out, like, there's a lot of us who probably, if we were born in the right generation, would have been diagnosed.
Right.
And even having them go through the testing, because one of the great things about testing is that it opens you up to getting supports that you need, right? And getting certain treatments that might help you, whether these are treatments with social cues.
Right.
Getting therapy, getting physical therapies if you have physical limitations. Or like my son, he wound up just needing a 504 plan, because even though he was very smart when it came to academics, he had trouble with his organization.
So what's a 504? Just to clarify what a 504 plan is?
So in the U.S., we have two things that are given to, one of two things typically that are given to students who are tested and fall under special education. You usually will get an IEP, which is an individualized education plan. Or if you don't get an IEP because your symptoms don't allow you to fall into that realm of getting an IEP, you can get a 504 plan,
right,
which just means that they set up specific supports that you need, right, for a time period. So his 504 plan included having a teacher, a special education teacher, be in certain classes with him. Okay. That would be able to modify the teacher's lessons to best support him and his needs. He received organizational structures, like when he was in ELA or English Language Arts class, where it would give him a sheet of paper that told him step-by-step directions.
Wow. Okay.
Remember to start your sentences with a capital.
Okay.
Check off that your grammar is correct. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you hit this point in the writing, right? So it literally broke it down and gave him step-by-step organizational structures.
Okay.
Because that's what they found that he needed. In his writing,
mm-hmm.
his thoughts were just all over the place, right?
Okay.
Versus if you would speak to him, it would come through as like, you know exactly what you're talking about. But
exactly.
If you looked at his writing, the way it was organized was all over the place. So they said, in order for us to support you, we're going to give you a checklist.
Okay.
So when you're finished doing your work, you go through this checklist and you make sure. So it's just about, again, helping the person have the supports that they need to be successful in that space.
Right? So for example, in the UAE, you probably won't get 504
plan.
Mm-hmm. But they do have, they call them LSA,
mm-hmm.
or Learning Shadow Teachers. They're shadow teachers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Somebody who sits in with your child
mm-hmm.
during a normal lesson mm-hmm. and breaks it down for your child how best to do it. But please note, the UAE is still, like, there's...
still growing. I like to say that it's a baby. It's 51 years old.
So,
I mean, you're coming from a country that's, you know, hundreds
of years,
especially in the education realm, et cetera, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're still learning with that. But the fact that they even, you know, are putting themselves out there now.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know for myself, when I was living in Korea, and that was about 10 years ago, it still was a stigma.
Yeah.
All right. It's you know, at that time. And I did see the starting to understand the growth, because just imagine that I'm in a classroom with 30 something, you know, young Korean girls, high school girls. And I mean, already it's, you know, I'm teaching them English. It's a second language for them. So already I have to get through the language barriers.
Yeah.
Then I'm talking to one and she, it was, on, you know, she had, I want to say And I'm not qualified to diagnose children, all right, at all. But from my observations and such, I noticed that she had dyslexia. Let's put it like that. Like a form of dyslexia.
Yeah.
And I didn't, but, you know, of course, with that, her language, not being English, of course, as her first language, being Korean, but just noticing how she was just simply writing just Korean letters, okay? Yeah. Awkwardly and weird, and sometimes she would even mix in the English letters with it, and I'm just like, what, you know, I'm looking at this like, what is happening here, what is going on? And they didn't know, and bless my heart, because we know, but my co-teacher at that, my Korean co-teacher, she didn't know, she didn't understand it, she didn't know the words for it. So I know she went and she researched it, and she came up to me, and we don't use this word anymore, of course, but she came up to me and she was like, Miss Kimberly, she has retardation. Okay. And I told her, Miss Kim, we don't use that word anymore. But you know, but it was something, and it told me that, okay, you know, abroad here in Korea, that this is something still new to them. Still a word that they don't really understand. But the year before I left, the last year at that school, they were embracing it, let's put it. And so they actually created a special needs classroom for a few students where they would go in and they would spend that time with that teacher. Now granted, it was even though it was being graced, it was still something that was still sensitive, because in that classroom they literally covered all the windows so you couldn't look in to that classroom. So, you know, and so that right there was like, you know, I'm pretty sure the students, because I don't, I mean, I know teenagers can be malicious, but they wouldn't go after, you know, if they understood, right? And so, you know, but that right there told me, okay, they still are sensitive to this. They still, and it could be the parents too. It can't, not necessarily the teachers or anything. They're still sensitive to this. But the fact that they actually created this room, that they are saying, okay, we need to, you know, it was wonderful. Because it's something that is, it's still, like we've said earlier, can be looked upon as wrong. But that was 10 years ago. I don't know the advancements that's probably happened, you know, today in this time, in this world. But, you know, in Korea. But that was something that was definitely noticed.
I think the fact that we're all educators here allows us to give a different perspective. And then, Brandy, you're a parent as well.
Right.
And then Kim and I are looking in as friends who are supporting friends and family with autistic children. So one of the few things I feel like, over the years, we know there's been a change, and probably just the fact that there's Autism Awareness Month this month shows that awareness campaigns are ongoing. And not to criticize, but Brandy, what is it as a parent an autistic child, would you have loved to see? You just got the diagnosis. It probably brought changes to your personal life, your son's life, your family life in its entirety. What is it like? What can you say you would like as a parent for people around to provide, and probably for educators as well? What type of support, or even, it doesn't have to be anything cracking or unique, but what is it in an ideal world? What would you have needed at that point?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So at that point, so I'm a parent, like I'm going to assume most of the parents who are listening to your podcast who will do a deep dive into Google. That's not the best route to take, right? Because a deep dive into Google will sometimes take you down a rabbit's hole into, like, cancer and all the other things, right? Like, Alice in Wonderland type stuff. But once I got the diagnosis, I was able to actually narrow my research, right? And it wasn't a guessing game of, like, oh, it could be this, it could be that. I was able to now say, okay, he took the test. The professional said that it's coming up as Asperger's syndrome. So now I can just focus on teaching myself how to do it. Mm-hmm. And luckily, we are living in a day and age where there's so much information on the internet that there are parental support groups if you want to take that route. Okay. There are articles in basically that teach the parents how to retrain our thoughts on how we communicate and best communicate with our children mm-hmm. with autism, right? Because every child is going to need a different style of parenting, right?
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
But when you get a diagnosis, and in this specific instance, that is autism, it allows you to better understand some of the behaviors that your child is exhibiting. And then it helps you to not respond in such a negative way. There were many times that I don't like to admit, but I would get so frustrated mm-hmm. with my son because he was constantly questioning things. Or I would go out. It would just be like to an outdoor market or an outdoor space. And he would flip out in the most, to me, outrageous ways, but it was because I wasn't understanding that the noise level did something to his mental yeah. that was not okay, right? Okay. And because I was looking at it as like, this is a normal thing,
right? Yeah.
We're a family,
right?
We
right.
can come to an outdoor market,
right.
You should be able to be around all these people and this noise mm-hmm. and just yes. deal with it, right?
Yeah.
And not understanding that. While the noise is not affecting me, right, or that I've been able to adjust and learn how to deal with the noise outside, him as a 7 or 8 or 9 year old child does not know how to deal with this level of noise.
Right.
And it is disrupting him. And that means I need to take him out of this space.
Mm.
And that it's okay that he can't deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
So it allowed me to learn that I had to readjust and understand when it comes to large spaces, he's not going to be okay in that. So that might mean I need to limit the time that we're in those spaces. Or I can do things to prepare him and say, you know what? We're going to be going into this space. It's going to be a lot of people. It's going to be a lot of noise. Take your earphones and take your iPad, right?
Right.
And if you feel too stimulated, right? And this is the part where it comes to parents learning the language to mm-hmm. then help their kids deal with these social situations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something you can do if your body feels like it's starting to get overwhelmed. If you're starting to get anxious, put your earphones on,
right?
Right.
Right.
Put your earphones on that help you cancel the noise
right.
and to focus on something that's going to keep you calm in these spaces, right? If I know we have
yeah.
to be there for a long time.
Right.
So that's part of the thing that helped with that. I would also have loved that as far as his teachers, at that time, it was me educating his teachers to say, listen, yes, Zion is very smart. Thank you for telling me that. But he's also has this diagnosis.
Mm.
These are some of the things you might see him do in the classroom, right?
Mm.
Let's come up with a plan to
right.
better support him,
right?
Right. And
right.
luckily, I live in a country where ASD is not very new. They have things that are already put in place.
Mm-hmm.
But the more educated I became, I was able to not just be a bystander and listener in the conversations where they were giving me like, these are the supports we can do.
Right.
But mm-hmm. I was able to actually participate in it and say, yes, these are the supports you can do, but this is also what he needs, right? How can you help put this in place as well? Whether it was extended testing time,
okay.
whether it was when we do tests, he needs to test in a space where there's only 5 or 6 students,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
He needs to
That's
be
nice.
In a quiet space so
yeah.
that he can focus,
That's
right?
Nice. Yeah.
I was able, because I had started to educate myself on some of the needs that he had, I was able to use the language in those conversations with the schools to help him get better supports and also to help inform his teachers on, like,
mm-hmm.
these are some of the behaviors you might see, right?
Yeah.
And as he got older, the supports that I had, luckily, there's a whole world of social media, and there's so many TikTokers and YouTubers that are in his age range
mm-hmm.
who are openly talking about their autism and their Asperger's.
That's
so
wonderful to
he's
hear,
able
yeah.
to connect with people from all over the world who also give tips and tricks on, like, how do you deal with this situation?
Okay.
So he's growing up in a really great time, and your kids are growing up in a really great time where those supports are there. Those communities
yeah.
are there, right? And as other countries become more informed and, again, go through their own process
mm-hmm.
of, like,
yeah.
this is not just an American thing,
right,
but this
right,
can be
yes,
happening,
right,
or this is not a Western,
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Because that's a part of
it
also,
it is,
right?
It is,
that,
yes.
like, all of these extra diagnoses, this is just a Western thing, and this doesn't apply to our children here, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, like you said in the beginning, Lizzie, this is a neurological disorder,
mm-hmm.
and it just means that your kids process the world
differently.
Yeah.
And we have to help them to navigate the world in different ways. And that might mean you have to teach them, like, hey, when that person makes that face, that means they're getting agitated.
Right,
so
right.
you might want to step back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you might want to go do something else. Or when you see someone crying, the correct response, right? Or the response would be to ask them if they're okay,
yeah.
to give them a hug.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it might just be different social cues
mm-hmm.
that maybe for a child who is neurotypical, you wouldn't have to explain.
Yeah.
But for a non-neurotypical child, you just have to give them that extra, extra lesson, extra learning of
yeah.
what we do.
And
you know,
and that leads me, because you kind of touched on this, and this leads me into probably our last question here, and that is actually about your child's future,
mm.
right?
Yeah.
About, because we want to remember now with Brandy's son, he has gone. She has taken him many places outside of the U.S., right?
Mm-hmm.
He has lived with her in Mexico, you know, considering this is still X-Men Chronicles, okay? She has taken him to Mexico. He has even come to Belize
mm-hmm.
And traveled. He has gone, you know, many different places. Tanzania, if I'm
yeah.
not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
as well. He's gone many different places, and especially with some of these places under the diagnose, right,
yeah.
of ASD.
Yeah.
And what we want to share with parents listening to this who have a child with ASD and considering moving or going abroad or considering traveling with their child, that it is okay. It is possible to do that.
Yeah.
And one great last example I want to share, because some parents worry about their child's future.
Oh.
Will they be able to thrive in this world without me? Will they be able to do things without me?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
are they going to become independent where
yeah.
I don't have to worry every day that they're living on their own and they're,
yeah.
you know, hopefully they don't burn the house down, you know, situations. And
yeah.
one of those things that I found very interesting that as my conversation prior to this podcast recording with Brandy was that Zion is of the age, about to be 17, which means that he is preparing for university.
Yeah.
And on his own, he just did his own university trip. So tell us about how that went for him. It doesn't have to be in detail,
yeah.
but, you know, just as a parent, knowing you let your child off free to go explore his
yeah.
next stage, his next adventure, I should say, in life. How did that feel, knowing that future is coming?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things I want to make clear is that whether your child is diagnosed
mm-hmm.
with ASD or not,
mm-hmm.
I think we all worry as parents.
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to function on their own as an adult? And just going through our lived experience, there's some things they're going to have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
There's as much as we try to teach them
mm-hmm.
and prepare them, there's a lot of things that they're going to have to learn on their own. So what has helped me go through that process, he went on his university tour on his own through the school district with obviously adult chaperones and a lot of other juniors and senior students. And at first he was very apprehensive about it. Mm-hmm. Did not want to go, but through some talking and explaining that, like, this is a part of your journey, mm-hmm. and it's okay. And luckily, again, I keep bringing up the advantages that just generation has with technology. He FaceTimed me in the call, right? And I believe he called me and texted me during those times where he may have been feeling a little anxious and didn't know. But I spent a lot of time with him talking about, like, these are the questions that you should ask when you get there. Lean on the support of the adults who are going to be with you if you need anything. And he's also very good at creating his own friend group, right? Okay. That's able to support him as well.
That's excellent.
Yeah. But I think as far as, like, his future, I think his future will be great. I think that the world is growing in a way where they're not stigmatizing mental health and neurological disorders. And they are in a space where they can be more comfortable to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, I do have an Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. And this is just what it means, right? Mm-hmm. And you may see me doing X, Y, and Z. This is just part of my disorder, right? And I may need help with this, this, and that, right? Yeah. But that's all it means, right? You're going to learn me and learn how I need support, just like if I was to meet someone else and they weren't diagnosed with anything, but maybe they're homesick. Right. Mm-hmm. And I have to learn how to support them with, it's okay to be, to miss your family. Yeah, right. Let's build our own community here. Right. So I always try to get people to, yes, if your child has a diagnosis, learn what that means. Mm-hmm. Right. Because that helps you to better support them and to support your own self and how you interact with them and how they interact with the world and vice versa. But even if your child doesn't have a diagnosis, we are all going to meet people where we need to learn, how can I help you be most comfortable in this situation? And since this is Expat Chronicles, right, this even stems to, like, this might be my first time abroad. I don't know how, maybe I came from a small town of 2,000 people, and maybe I'm living in a town now that has 10,000 people, and I don't know how to navigate this, or this is my first time being by myself, and I don't know how to deal with the loneliness, or, you know, I'm missing my family, but I need to be here and grow, right? So, like, think about it more of just, like, we're all just learning each other, right? And there are going to be some things that we have to learn, unfortunately, the hard way, right? But there are going to be, that's life. And there's going to be people there to support you. So I just have to be prayerful and send out positive vibes that he's going to always have a community around him that's going to be able to support him.
I just want to say, for those parents living in the UAE, and after listening, just, Randy's based in the States, it's a totally different experience. And also, just because I'm African, autism is like the worst thing that can ever happen. Like, especially to your son, the stigma attached to it. And I'm glad that because we are expats, we get to see and experience things differently. And specifically in the UAE, for those who are think that their children might be displaying autistic symptoms, or would just like a test to check for diagnosis, please remember that the UAE is just launched a national policy on autism, and the initiatives include diagnosis, healthcare, human resources awareness, and inclusive education. We didn't get a chance to talk about that one. Inclusive education out there. There are 95 centers in the UAE that deal with people with disabilities. They call them disadvantages. What do they call
the word? People of determination.
People of determination in the UAE. Mm-hmm. And 61 of these centers are specifically reserved for children with autism.
Wow.
So just Google out there, find out, and you can actually book a testing at any one of these centers. And then this is an interesting fact I found out recently. On the 16th of December, 2022, which is just a few months ago, Dubai launched an initiative. They want to be the first autism destination in the Middle East and Northern Africa. So they're going into a full-blown testing and training of anyone in tourism. Right?
Wow.
So that includes their theme parks. They're starting with the theme parks to make them friendly for children with autism. Not just children, even adults with autism. And there are quite a few centers around Dubai that are being licensed to be autism safe centers for your kids to actually come hang out and have fun. So guys, keep your ear to the ground, check out the news. There's just a lot.
That's one thing on I can say about the UAE. Like, you know, a lot of people of course still think that the streets are made out of gold.
They are not.
But, but the growth has been insane here, and it's not just in the buildings and the, you know, in the technology, the innovations. It's in the care of, okay, the people matter too. There are people out there that are, that need that attention, that need that focus. And, you know, and yes, we don't have these things in place, but guess what? We're going to make them. We're going to put them in place. And, you know, and like everything, it takes time to grow, to see the changes. It's not going to happen overnight, you know, but the fact that it started is the step that is needed. And so it's very nice to hear and see that the UAE recognizes this and says, hey, let's change this up. Let's do better because we can. We can do better, you know? And so it's lovely to hear those facts, Lizzie. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much, Brandy, for coming all the way from the U.S., New York City. Or not New York City, sorry, but New York.
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York, coming here to share her insights, share how it is, you know, for those parents out there, or even, you know, educators, non-parents, you know, family members, because even if you don't have a child, you might have a family, you know, a member who is part of this, and to really understand it and to know that it's okay, it's awesome, it's okay, you know, and let's, you know, let's grow and learn, you know, let's not move backwards, let's move forward. So once again, thanks again, Brandy.
Thank you so much.
We enjoy having you here and hearing your insights. And once again, this is Expat Chronicles. Bye.
Bye. Bye.